Welcome to the Creative Cookbook Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Callahan, co-founder and CEO of Primally. This podcast is all about the music industry and creative businesses. I spend the time talking to founders, artists, and musicians, hearing their stories and getting them to share their best techniques to succeed. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and share with your friends. Let's hop into the show. Hey, Nimrod, thanks very much for joining me on today's podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Pete. It's been a while. Great to see you again. Hope all is well on your end.
It has been a while. When did we last speak? Was it before the old pandemic kind of full launch, a year ago?
I think we talked in between waves. You know, this is how I calculate it.
Which wave are we on?
I don't know. I think 4.5. It's getting closer to the G number. So it's been a while. So I think we've been chatting a year ago. Yeah, just in the beginning. I don't know.
I think you put
it in the timeline.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the end of the world. But yeah, I want to chat to you about MySfera and how you started and where you're at now with your business, really. Can you talk me through it?
Yeah, sure. So I started MySfera with my partner Netta around 3 years ago. Both Netta and myself comes from the worlds of content curation on the one hand and technology on the other. And we felt that the routes for audiences to musicians have yet to be completely open, and it was very hard to reach new audiences. It was quite an old world in some sense. It was mostly focused on blog posts and like old media. And we felt that there was a world emerging of new routes to audiences, and like music streaming, third-party playlists, like influencers on Instagram, like people talking music on Twitter. And we wanted to find a way to streamline it on the one hand, and on the other hand, just to make it as affordable as possible for those musicians. And we started building MySfera as just like some kind of a marketplace to connect musicians to the content creators. And we felt that one of the biggest pain points for the musicians was the fact that they needed to really define the music that they made. And they had a lot of problem doing that. It's quite funny to think about it, but sometimes we don't really understand what our music is, and we don't really understand the preferences of the other side, which caused a lot of mismatches and like a low number of acceptance. So we decided to take a very different approach in just our full-blown beta. And we started doing the matchmaking ourselves using data and behavior analysis of our content creators. So if we can take like two steps back and just describe MySfera from a high level, it's our service connects between musicians, mostly emerging musicians, with content creators that love to discover music and communicate it through the different social platforms. And the way we do it is through our matchmaking algorithm. So once a musician submits music to us, we analyze it and actually match the music with the most relevant content creators on the platform. So we created different levels of thresholds just to make sure that the music reaches the right sets of ears, because we know how frustrating it is for musicians just to send music to people. And sometimes if you send it to the wrong people, you would get very low acceptance rates. So it was very important for us to make sure there are relevant connections. And on the other hand, we make sure that the music not only fits the tastemaker musical preferences, but also fits the audience of the tastemaker. So let's say, for example, I could be a yoga instructor and I can create relaxed playlists for my yoga sessions, but I can listen to hardcore punk. So it's not only about the music you liked, it's about the music you like sharing. So this is an additional layer of matchmaking we're doing. So in this way, we really hope to reduce the friction between creating connections.
Yeah, that sounds very good, but very complicated from your setup point of view. And I think what you're saying is it's really tough for musicians, isn't it, to get their music noticed. I actually put a question out on LinkedIn yesterday saying, what is the hardest part about music promotion? And people are literally saying to get people to take notice of their music. You can write good music, but unless you've got some kind of marketing understanding of how to tell people about your music, it becomes another challenge in itself, doesn't it? So what you're doing is actually eliminating that learning process and kind of, like you said, matchmaking to the right kind of playlist and reach and how to grow it. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, that's definitely accurate. We want to lower the bar of entrance to those content creators. You know, some, I could say that 20 years ago, what mattered was if your music was reviewed by, I don't know, Pitchfork or the Rolling Stone or somewhere like that. And the availability of information and the rise of streaming platforms and the rise of online platforms in general really democratized where you can be discovered. And with this democratization, the other side of it is it's really hard to find the right places. There is a lot of noise. And if you're not focused on the accurate reach out technique, and if you're not accurate about who your audience should be, you can really get lost. And this is definitely something that makes music promotion very difficult, at least from my perspective. And I think a different side of it is actually building the right tool set for your growth and understanding how to combine different tools to start elevating your career. It's not only about doing those connections with tastemakers. It's also about, I think, building engagement within your community. So we get musicians to the doorstep of the new audiences, but we really emphasize on how they should keep those new listeners and transform them into fans. And I think this is somewhere that is super important for musicians to keep in mind always, because you can improve your metrics across the board, but if you are not engaging constantly and you're not communicating with your audience and understanding how they feel about you and how they feel about your music and how you can elevate your relationship with them, I think it would be hard for you to take the next step. Because although I really love social media and we do a lot of things that are considered social media and music streaming, I feel that ownership of one's audience in terms of communicating is something that is really critical. And I believe that building the right tool set for both acquiring new audience members and engaging new audience members is something that is critical for musicians, especially in the emerging side of things.
Yeah, that's really important. On the previous podcast, I spoke with Scott Orr. He's a Canadian musician. He's got a business called Other Record Labels, and he teaches record labels how to basically be good record labels. And he says a big part of it is actually storytelling and getting your audience engaged on a personal level as well as on a musical level. So what you're saying there is kind of, I think, the way forward, isn't it? As in, you got to have that deeper connection with the fan and the artist and how the two can resonate between the pair of them, really, and keep pushing that growth forward. So when you started with MySphera, how did you come up with this algorithm that works? Because that's a complicated process, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's been a roller coaster and a lot of versioning, but initially we really looked at what we can understand, and it's getting an input from the musician to describe his music. And we'll put an asterisk on that because we will get back to it. And we had the preferences from the tastemakers, the content creators that received the music, their musical preferences. And then we started creating our own technology that analyzes music and started leveraging third-party services that would help us to enrich our matchmaking algorithm. So it's always about adding more and more data and more touch points between the two sides. And it's getting better and better, and we're pretty happy about it. But it's amazing that when we had a really naive perspective of just thinking that, yeah, the content creators will tell us what they like, and the musicians will describe what they have. And it's a really easy mission to matchmake, right? Because jazz is jazz, but what you discover is jazz is not jazz. And the subjectivity of moods and genres plays a really big role in our matchmaking process. We try to find the most neutral ways to describe music internally. And this is really interesting. And I think it's so intriguing to see how far is the perception of one's music from what it actually is. Now, sorry for rambling back about me again, but I never created music. My background in music is, as I said, from content curation. I was doing a content curation for a radio station, digital radio station in Tel Aviv, and I was a DJ. So I always felt I really understood genres, and I felt what music is. And then when you look at musicians trying to tag their own content, you're starting to feel like the bass is falling underneath your feet, because everything is so vast in terms of what jazz can be. So it's been quite a challenge, and it was the main reason we evolved our matchmaking process to not be only focused on genres and mood, but on different metrics like tastemaker engagement and similarity between tracks and different more low level qualities of waveforms.
It's a really good point about how people sort of talk about their own music, because in Primarily we've got we allow people to put their genres in, and we predefine genres just to make it simple. But as we're growing, people are saying, well, we'll talk about jazz. Literally, I just had an email this week asking about jazz, and you've got jazz, but you haven't got smooth jazz. Like smooth jazz is different from jazz. And I was like, can't you just use jazz? And they were like, no, it needs to be smooth jazz on, you know, because that's how they categorize their music. But to me, it might just be jazz, but to them, it's not jazz, it's smooth jazz. And to you, it might be something different altogether. And yeah, that's a challenge in itself, isn't it? And you're on another level of, how do you get a playlister who's interested in jazz, but also like smooth jazz, who understands the musician's music might not be what they describe as smooth jazz, but actually something different, but actually is jazz. You end up in this kind of double world of genres. And yeah, that must be a very complicated algorithm. And when you said you were naive thinking it would be easy, it certainly isn't, is it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, the thing is that there are two sides of the spectrum. There are people that completely drill down how they define their music, like the nuance between jazz and smooth jazz, or I don't know, like spiritual jazz. You can have like the whole world of jazzes. And on the other end, you have the people that think their music is, I don't know, metal, but it's EDM. It's really funny that there are two kinds of people. People that define their music based on what they want it to be. And the other side is like more drilling down, really trying to niche down and really define the quirky subgenre. So it's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. If I wrote some rock music and sent it to you, can you talk me through what you would do for that kind of music?
Definitely. So I will just go the full flow of my sphere. As I said, our main focus is to reduce friction. So what you will do, you will choose your campaign. We have two types of campaign, a basic campaign and a premium campaign. They differentiate in terms of reach, the size of the potential audience of the tastemakers your music will be matched with. So let's say you chose one of the campaigns. You send us your link to Spotify, to your specific track that you wish to promote. You share a few tags. And then once you complete the payment, the music is sent to our analysis pool. And in the analysis pool, we start dissecting the music itself and understanding what is it in terms of my Sphera data. And once the analysis is done, we're matching your music with the first batch of tastemakers. So from that moment, from the moment of submission to the moment of analysis, it's around 24 hours. Then you will get like a kickoff email telling you that your music has been submitted successfully and analyzed. And now it's on its way for the tastemakers. So now we're changing sides to the tastemaker side of things. And we created a web app for the tastemakers where they receive the music. So your song will be available across the different queues of the tastemakers we matched you with. This is the first batch. So based on the interaction of the first batch, we will optimize our matchmaking process based on the interaction. So if we see that the tastemakers disliked your track across the board, we will reshape the matchmaking and send it. And based on that feedback, we will send to the second batch of tastemakers and the third batch of tastemakers. So it's constant optimization. And from your side as a musician, we send you a brief update on a weekly basis about who we matched your music with. And of course, if your music was featured on, I don't know, on a Spotify playlist or an Instagram channel or a Twitter channel, or was even considered for something that we call the spotlight for content creators that want to do something other than that to the music. I don't know, like creating a reaction video for the specific song you made on YouTube. We will send you an instant notification letting you know what happened with a link. So this is the process in a nutshell.
That's very cool. I can remember when you first started, everything was manual and you were going like the clappers, weren't you? Trying to kind of keep up with the demand. Has this been automated now? It sounds it.
Yeah. We really found different ways and technologies to help us streamline this whole process. The communication was automated, I think, from quite early on, but it was really hard to make sure that tastemakers can create all these levels of content through the platform. This was one of the things that was very important for us because, you know, first and foremost, we are a discovery platform for those content creators. They are always looking for new music to communicate to their audiences. And not only through a particular channel, but they want to leverage music across their social channels. So it was quite a big improvement for us to start creating story templates for Instagram featuring the artist and the music, and creating new ways to easily share the music also across their Twitter channels. And it's always about finding the new routes to communicate music with an audience. And I think it's not only important for content creators, but also important for musicians. Although it's different from what we do, we try to educate musicians on the value of creating different routes of communication. You probably are much stronger than me in that particular sense, because what you do is you really elevate the level of communication in Promolive and really provide powerful insights on that. But it's always about finding the new places where you can provide value.
It's a good point, and like we were saying earlier, musicians are musicians. They write music, but you know, then what do they do with it? And they're not marketers and they're not promoters themselves. I mean, like, you're a DJ and you've had that experience from the receiving end, and you know what to do with the music. Once you receive it, you play it and you know how to get that reach. But as a musician, there's that, huge gap from like, well, you know, I've just written an EP, like how do I get it noticed? Between our apps, we work on slightly different ends, but both from the promotion angle, we're trying to reduce that friction, aren't we, of how to get music noticed. And we don't have to teach them how to do anything. Sam's MySphere is now kind of on another level of how it used to be. And I'm, you know, excited to see where it goes next, really. If someone is brand new, say they've just written their first EP and they didn't know your service existed, what kind of things can they do to start getting the ball rolling of promoting their music? You said content is huge right now. What kind of things do you suggest?
I think that, you know, it's funny to say it, but first and foremost, start obtaining knowledge about the ecosystem. And you know what? I will go back one small and important step. I think that there are more independent musicians that are doing everything on their own now than there was ever before. Labels, I wouldn't say they're not redundant at all, but you can do a lot of the things that the label was able to do alone from your bedroom. Similar to the fact that you can produce a complete EP from your computer easily nowadays. You know, you can even do it online with a friend using platforms like Splice. So now, if you want to be a musician, you really need to first and foremost educate yourself about the ecosystem. And releasing an EP or a single is just the first step. And I think that it's so important to go on different platforms like Reddit and go through the subreddits and read and ask questions. And on the other hand, it's critical to learn about promotion. And there are amazing resources, ebooks about promotion in general. And you should read those. Not 5 books a week, but you should read at least a really powerful guide for promoting your music using advertising, like paid advertising, like Instagram or Facebook or Google. And it's funny that I say Instagram or Facebook. I should say Meta. But
in the metaverse.
Yeah. I hope they can give me on that, yeah. But the use of MySphere, I feel, is not to be confused with complete strategy. This is what I go to. And it goes back to the tool set. So I think that if you made an EP, you should do a lot of schooling in terms of the different aspects of music. And in terms of promotion, you should really investigate multiple services and give them a try, because results really vary in terms of the music you make, and there is so much different nuances that could really impact your promotion campaign across different platforms. And I really hope that upcoming musicians will build themselves a small budget and see how they could diversify their initial promotion portfolio and see what's working for them. And once something works for them, you can double down. I'm not saying that give anything one try, and if it doesn't work, never come back. I know that sometimes you can come back 2 months after and it will work much better for you. But I'm just saying that, first of all, have a wide perspective. Secondly, educate yourself about the different verticals where you can promote your music. And lastly, I think, always look back to what happened through each of those channels and double down on what's working. So this is my perspective on that.
I think that's accurate in having this kind of omni approach of a little bit of everything is a good approach, but it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Like when you're using the omni approach, isn't a bit of Instagram, bit of Facebook, bit of Twitter, TikTok and so on, you end up spreading yourself really thin, and all you're doing is promoting your content in drips and drabs and not really doing anything with it other than just that one post and forgetting about it. It might be worthwhile just picking like 2 or 3 platforms to start with, and then, you know, spend a few hours here and there actually engaging in that community. But it's not just about posting your new tune on Reddit, because that will get you a quick ban. But if you spend an hour engaging with other people's questions and then talk about your own music, you're kind of promoting yourself indirectly without the blatant spam approach, which is what people miss and they go wrong with. They just think, oh, I'll go on Reddit, I'll post my new track. Before they know it, that subreddit has banned them from the forum for spamming. But
definitely, definitely. I'm sorry.
If someone is saying, how do I make a baseline in Reason?
Mm-hmm.
You could answer that question and say, here's a baseline I made in Reason. Here's a link to my tune, and do it that way around. And do you think the indirect sort of omnipresence is worthwhile?
I will first start by saying that I think I was really misunderstood in terms of Reddit. I'm not saying never spam your content and your music. I don't look at Reddit as a place of promoting music directly. It's not a platform for that. It's a platform for obtaining knowledge. And I think you really touched that in terms of like how you can indirectly promote your content. But for me, Reddit from day one was a place I went to learn. So you have amazing subreddits with people that have so much experience, and they take the time to communicate what went good and what went bad in their promotion campaigns. And you should definitely be there to understand the ecosystem, not to spam your content. So this is first. And in terms of indirect promotion, definitely answer a few questions, talk to people, learn. Maybe you will find a way to collaborate. Maybe you'll find a way to tap someone else's audience. Maybe you can get feedback on your song and you can go back to the mastering chair and really optimize it. And on the other side of things, I totally agree that in terms of longevity, you can't be across all the different channels. But what I look at in terms of like finding the places you should focus on is that the initial phase, like we don't know what will work. And for that initial phase, I think musicians should really go far and wide, because as we said previously, in the way we think our music is something particular and it could be something really different, this could really impact your promotion strategy. Because sometimes you can be like, yeah, my music is, I don't know, too good to be promoted on Instagram via ads. I think it should only be organic. But maybe if you run a few ads, it will work perfectly for you. Or I don't want to send my music to tastemakers. I don't feel it would be viable for me, but people will love your content and will just love sharing it. So I think the initial stage of trying out different sides of music promotion is really, really important. I totally agree that it's not a viable strategy from the moment you start your career and the moment you end it. This is why optimization is so crucial, because you need to see what works constantly and continue from there. And I'm not saying that you should promote your content on Twitter, doing the occasional post and then being sad that no one retweets it. But you should give yourself the benefit of trying the different platforms and seeing where your audience is and investigating it and building your communities throughout the channels that work.
How do you gauge if something's working then? Because a lot of people say, oh, I don't know if my promotion's working. How, obviously, play counts going up is a good sign, but how do you work out which channel is effective? Like, is it the amount of follows you get, say, on Instagram through your marketing efforts or view counts? Is there a good way of measuring at the moment?
You know, I find it so fascinating, because followers sometimes doesn't tell a thing. You know, I really like looking at engagement and the discovery. I think Instagram have like accounts that discovered you on their insights. And you can always look at your engagement across the posts. You should see that more people are engaging with your content. I really like, you know, personally, to see more people sending me direct messages on Twitter and on Instagram, because it shows the interest. And I really want to see my followers my followers transform to a community. So I think engagement is really key. Just see that people are commenting on what you do. People want to communicate with you. People engage with your content, because a follower could be a vanity metric. You know, you have 1,000 followers. If no one of the followers is engaging with your content, it's a problem. And, you know, it's really important not only that your followers will engage with your content, that they will be keen for your next release. And this is how I look at it. I think it's not like a direct metric, but I always look at, when I look at different social profiles, I want to see how close their follower base is acting like a community. They're active, and when you see it, it's quite evident.
Yeah, that's really cool. A good tip from what I've found from just marketing anything is always to ask questions, because if you ask a question, it's more likely someone will respond to you. And when you're just posting your music, say a clip on Instagram, and you just leave it as like, this is my new tune, check it out, you know, what the stereotypical what people do, instead of saying, this is my tune, check it out, you could say, what do you think about 1:34? And get people to actually listen to 1:34. And then, you know, well, what do you think about the drop on this bass line? Or, you know, do you like the hi-hats? You know, getting people to actually listen to it in more detail and give you feedback, and then start building that community. It works for email marketing as well. It's a big one. You know, ask a question at the end of your email. You know, it gets people to think, oh yeah, I'll respond. It's a human actually asking me a question. And it's building that connection, isn't it, between the two again. And, you know, always direct it back to, you know, these are people at the end of the day. You're not just spamming. And, you know, when you spam, people know to spam, they take no notice. So if you act like a human, post like a human, and kind of ask questions like a human, it works much better than just saying bye, 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 and that approach.
Definitely, definitely. You know, I look at it sometimes in another layer. You know, you should push a lot of content that is not directly to yourself, and do like a pull piece of content occasionally, like not only just promoting, like, and here new campaigns on MySphera and new article, new blog post. I try to sometimes in my social strategy to communicate on things that are just knowledge for people, and not always being with the CTA of start your new campaign, you know. And I think it's really related to what you say. If you transform it from something that is directly related to a conversion, people could be sometimes put off from that. And if you provide them value and provide them this human touch, they would most likely love interacting with your content much more.
Some good advice. I want to slightly switch. Before we finish up, I want to talk about how you've grown MySphera, because you're doing the same as musicians from a software and business point of view. Do you take similar approaches? Because your target audience is sort of musicians, isn't it? Opposed to, say, record labels using your service. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we work with a lot of labels, but we mostly focused on emerging musicians because we felt that this is like the market we feel mostly connected with. And in terms of building MySphera, we always focused on delivering a positive experience and having the musicians that worked with us be like a referral network for our services, and having them communicate about the service. So we used a lot of referrals on the one hand, and on the other hand, we love content strategy. So we found different platforms that share the same audiences with us and wanted to create different collaborations, communicating on different blog posts and articles and having MySphere featured there and being a part of this this specific blog repertoire in terms of articles. So these two routes have been really powerful for us in terms of driving growth. And of course, we do our best to communicate constantly through social media. And personally, we really like Twitter. I think Twitter is a great place to communicate, especially with musicians and emerging musicians. And lastly, I think that, as you said, you should really see what's not working for you. Personally, we haven't been really active on Facebook. Facebook has been a platform that was not beneficial for us at all, unlike Instagram, for example. So in terms of our growth, it's always trying to create a word of mouth cycle. And on the other hand, content, creating content, putting your content across the right platforms, and definitely constantly communicating through social. So this has been our three biggest channels of growth.
That sounds good. And word of mouth is the most powerful way we found, but it's the most hardest to track, isn't it? I'll go on Google Analytics. I know this is getting technical now, and I'll see the direct traffic and the conversions and thinking, well, where are you coming from? we have the same problem as musicians, and you know, it's the same hurdle of every kind of business, isn't it? And how do you get more people to view your stuff, and how do you measure it, and then how do you double that? And it's the same challenge. And it's interesting that you say Facebook hasn't been worthwhile, because it doesn't really work for us either. I think maybe old Zuckerberg and his metaverse needs to change his algorithm again like it used to be, but hey ho. So before we finish up, Nimrod, what's the plans for MySphere for the future? Are you metaversing, or
we're metaversing, NFTing, you know, all the buzzwords?
Yeah,
no, just joking. I think we are creating new touch points, and we're building new touch points for the ongoing campaigns to find new types of tastemakers. We are constantly searching for new platforms that music should be shared in, and the process should be easier for musicians and tastemakers. And on the other end, we're thinking of different routes and different tools to build for musicians to be able to communicate better with their audiences, and finding the ways to empower musicians as we empower our tastemakers. So I think these are the two main routes we're taking at the moment.
Nice. What do you think about TikTok? Is that gonna last?
I think TikTok is wild, and I'm not a big fan. I'm not scrolling TikTok as much as I scroll, I don't know, Instagram, but you see the magnitude and the impact. And sorry for going back to the buzzwords, but you see they had like the Moments NFT launch with like selected creators from the TikTok universe connected with major artists. You know, it becomes like a cultural thing. And when a social platform becomes synonymous with interaction, similar that to like having a video conference is having a Zoom, you know, you understand the magnitude of that platform. Although I feel there are a lot of things that I not completely understand about TikTok. And I feel that it's quite a black box in terms of like what succeeds and how to do it right. I think it's here to stay. I think it's a really powerful platform with a really powerful backing and quite interesting technology. So that's my two cents on that.
It's interesting seeing what music does really well, and it's never about the music, it's always about the content in it, and the music's like the byproduct of the content, and it just happens by accident that some young girls do a dance routine and it goes viral, and then suddenly they've done a better job at promoting music than some publicists. And like you're saying, going back, like record labels and that are relevant still, but are they still as relevant as they used to be for breaking new artists, where you could just ask some girls to do a dance routine on your music and see if it goes viral instead, and you'll probably find more exposure that way than going through, say, Pitchfork, maybe.
I think that on the one hand, record labels are as important as ever because they really pack well the know-how. And as you can reach out to TikTokers to do the dance, I bet that if you're at a label that had quite a substantial roster, they've done it a lot. So on that side of things, yeah, label is definitely like the ultimate tool set. It's like a Swiss knife. It has all the different tools for you to use to unlock growth. And on the other side of things, you can always learn anything on your own through the internet. And you can always reach out to people and you can always give things a try. So it's yes and no. Maybe it's a bad answer, but I feel that musicians should never just be like, I'm never signing in a label. And on the other side, I don't think that the label is like a dream solution for every problem you have.
I suppose it depends, doesn't it? Depends on your knowledge. If you're good at marketing, good at chatting, you like engaging, then maybe you can grow to a certain size on your own. But I think, I used to run a label, so I'm pro labels, and I think you're not paying a label, but you're joining a label sort of repertoire to get their experience and knowledge and how to grow your brand further. And that's really what I think a label's all about. It's cool having a nice pool of artists, but unless you're actually good at running a business, and what's the point of joining that label? You see the good labels versus the bad labels, and the good labels you see everywhere. And there's a reason for that. So I think, like you said, it depends on your music, your style, and what you want to do with your music career, really.
Definitely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Where can more people find out about my Sphera Nimrod?
You can search us on Instagram and Twitter at mysfera with an underscore, my underscore sfera. And on our website, mysfera.co.
Amazing. Let's finish there. And yeah, been great chatting with you.
Thanks so much, Pete. It's been a pleasure.